Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Well, hey, welcome back. We're so glad you're back with us for another fun week. We're going to get to Linda P. Jones here in just a moment. But if you've ever wondered if there were a way to capitalize on all that chatter that you see investors doing on social media, your wait's over because the Buzz Index uses the same artificial intelligence techniques that some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds use, and you'll have their expertise at your fingertips, make their edge your edge. It's called the Buzz Index. It's licensed to an exchange-traded fund and trades under ticker symbol BUZ, and it gives investors like you and I a portfolio of securities that show the highest degree of positive investor sentiment online. What does that mean? Maybe I'll tell you a little bit more about that later. But for now, if you want to just go check it out, it's at moneytreepodcast.com/buzz. That's moneytreepodcast.com/buzz. And now here she is, Linda P. Jones.
Welcome to the podcast, Doug Goldstein, author of The Inheritance Book and my co-podcaster on the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Hey, welcome to the show, Doug.
Thank you so much, Linda. Real pleasure to be here.
I want to talk with you about your new book, The Inheritance Book, because I think this is a really important topic for people. And I wanted to hear what you had to say. First of all, why did you write this book?
You know, in my day job as a financial advisor, being that I don't spend all my time doing podcasting, I find that this is one of the topics that either people really like talking about or they hate talking about it. And when eventually everyone has to talk about it, because we all got two parents and eventually we're going to have to deal with it, if people haven't really dealt with it much, they find themselves in such a whirlwind. They're in such a tizzy. And unfortunately, so often they get swept up and make awful, awful decisions. And it's usually because there's some sort of emotional turmoil, which of course you would expect, you know, and they feel pressured to make decisions. They don't have checklists. They don't know what to do. It's probably their first of two times ever dealing with this. And, you know, because they don't have the experience, hopefully they end up on the doorstep of a financial advisor or a lawyer who really walks them through the process. But the reason I wrote the book was I said, you know, I've spoken to so many people literally through my office and through my books and my podcasts and my newspaper articles. You know, I think I probably reached tens or hundreds of thousands of people telling them what to do. And I just wanted to get it out there. So really in a simple way, people would, you know, it happens. I don't even want to say God forbid someone dies because everyone's going to go. It's that and taxes. But I want the readers to say, okay, I remember Doug Goldstein wrote this book. Let me see what I have to do first. And they just get the checklist and get working.
Oh, that's good. Making it easier for people. So aren't inheritances a good thing? Why is there an issue with inheritances? Is there a misconception?
Well, when people get a lot of money, that often ends up leading to a lot of problems. So, you know, believe it or not, and in fact, I think I've heard you say this too, so I know you believe it, that when people win the lottery, they go bankrupt often within a couple of years. The vast majority of them do. And similar things happen when people get inheritances. They're so not used to having this amount of money that they begin to say, well, you know, maybe I could buy a little bit of this or a little bit of that. And, you know, I had a client who was in, they were middle-aged. They received over $2 million in an inheritance. We did a whole big financial plan, showed that they would have enough money for the rest of their life if they just, you know, continued working and could retire early. And what'd they do? They took out $50,000 just to spend on a few things. And you think, so what's the big deal? It's not a big deal. The big deal was 3 months later when they took out another $50,000. And every 3 months, they took out $50,000 and sometimes more. And the interesting thing is now these people are possibly not even going to be able to be my client anymore because they're not going to make our minimum. And it's because they didn't know how to handle the inheritance. And they absolutely didn't want to listen to some wisdom about, hey, take it easy and go slowly and save and invest and let compound interest be your friend.
Yes, I think it's about 70% of people lose their lottery winnings within 5 years. So it is a real issue. And you kind of just described how that happens. What should people do with money they inherit?
I think the first thing that you have to do when you inherit money, in most cases, is nothing. Just sit tight. It's funny how often I'll get a call from someone who says, yeah, my father passed away. So I'm so sorry. When? Thursday. Like, really? And you're calling me? Well, why are you calling me? Well, I saw you in the newspaper. That's not the time to be calling the financial advisor. That's the time to pretty much be doing nothing. Why? Because you've got to deal with family. You've got to deal with funeral arrangements. You've got to deal with all the personal issues. let the money stuff, you know, sit on the sidelines for a while. In rare occasions, there's something urgent you have to do. Like there might have been some huge debt that needs to be paid, or perhaps not something you necessarily have to deal with that day, but in the very near future, if the person you're inheriting money from might have only had like one stock in his whole portfolio, you know, $3 million in one stock, that's a pretty risky situation. And that's something you might want to deal with quickly. So my excuse, if you're not going to do nothing, which I really think is the preferred thing to do first, is deal with the emergency issues. And if you're going to do that, have a financial planner advise you, not your friends, not your barber, and not your doctor. Doctors are notoriously poor investors, so don't want to get advice from them. Sit back and then deal with the urgent things first, and then start working on a long-term financial plan.
When people come to you and they've inherited a portfolio, do you find that they get attached to the things in that portfolio and they don't want to sell them?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's kind of weird. We call that inheritance loyalty syndrome. What happens is that people inherit money, like, you know, maybe from their grandfather, and he loved the stock market and he picked a few stocks, and, you know, the portfolio literally might be $4 million and $3 million of those dollars might all be in, you know, six stocks. And the person says, well, you know, grandpa loved those companies. He used to talk about them all the time. It would be so disloyal of me to sell them. And the fact is, it's not disloyal at all, especially, for example, let's say you're the widow and you need to have the money in order to buy a ticket into a senior facility where you want to live. If you have all the money in just a few stocks and they crash, your dreams will be shattered. That is surely not what your husband had wanted, or, you know, not what your grandfather had wanted. He didn't necessarily say, I'm going to control these assets from the grave. He built up the wealth during his lifetime, and now he's passing it to you. You have loyalty to do the right thing with the money and to take care of it, to be a good steward of the inheritance. But that does not mean that you have to have a specific attachment to any one investment. You can be sure that, you know, you may love a stock, but the stock doesn't love you back. It doesn't go both ways. Think about your own interests, set up your own proper financial plan, and you certainly don't have to hold the investments just because someone else did before.
Yeah. And now you need the investments maybe to do a different objective for you than before. Maybe it was for growth and now it's for income or something that will provide more security. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, at a different age, different things happen and different amounts of money. You know, the grandfather might have had millions and millions of dollars, but when you inherited it, you might have been one of 12 beneficiaries. And so he had the luxury of investing very aggressively because he wasn't worried about it. Maybe he also had a pension. Whereas for you, you might actually need to get monthly income from a portfolio. It's a totally different type of account. And by the way, for Americans, when they inherit stocks that maybe someone held with the huge capital gains, as far as taxes go, and, you know, please don't take this as individual tax advice, but in general, when someone passes away, his estate gets what's called a stepped up cost basis. And what that means is, let's use the example I was mentioning before. Let's say the grandfather had paid $100,000 for these stocks, and when he died, they were worth $6 million. Had he sold them a week before he died, he would have had to pay capital gains tax on $5,900,000, all of that capital gains. But the day that he died, the cost basis gets reset to the $6 million, the value it is then. So if his heirs at that point sell the portfolio, it's as if the stocks were bought at $6 million and sold at $6 million, and there would not be a capital gains tax. Now, this, by the way, I'm only talking about an American scenario. As I hope you know, I work with people who live outside the United States who have U.S. investment portfolios. But if you live, let's say, where I live in Israel, then there may be other taxes involved in the situation. So make sure you get, you know, personalized tax advice.
Absolutely. And Doug, back before anyone even passes away, we need a will, but yet so few people actually have wills. Why is that? And what happens if there is no will?
So let's answer the second question first. What happens if there is no will? Well, pretty much whatever the law is of the state where you live. I simply can't comment on all of the 50 states. I know that in Israel, the law is that if someone dies intestate, which means without a will, if someone dies intestate, then basically, half of his money goes to his spouse and half of his money gets distributed amongst his children. So you can imagine a very awkward situation where people didn't know this was going to happen and they thought that, you know, it's no problem. When I die, my wife will get the money. And then, you know, when she dies, the kids get the money. And all of a sudden, the wife becomes partners with the kids, maybe in the house or maybe in the stock portfolio, and that's not what was intended. And that can create huge, huge animosity or anger in the family that could have been so easily solved if the people had had just written a will.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think so few people have wills?
Writing a will is one of the easiest things to put off until tomorrow. And then when you wake up tomorrow, you're like, huh, that was easy. I'll put it off until tomorrow again. And you just keep doing it. It's like, it's certainly one of those things that just people aren't really interested in dealing with. But it's a huge mistake at all ages, because let's say that you're a young married couple and, you know, you have a kid. The will is in part for the money, which obviously that's the area that I focus on with people. But, you know, let's say you have a kid. If both parents should pass away, who should raise the child? Who should it go to? If you don't write that down, it's going to be up to the local judge to decide what he thinks should happen with that child. And is that really the way you want your assets to be taken care of? And similarly, as you get older and statistically you are more likely to pass away, you have more of a need to clearly state what you want to happen. It's just more complicated, by the way, when someone dies without a will. And one of the things that I've seen in our financial planning practice is that we deal with the practicalities of money passing from one generation to the next. And when I mean the practicalities, I'm not talking about the lawyers who they're kind of dealing with the theory and they write the wills, but they don't actually, you know, get down and dirty and have to literally open new accounts and move money from here to there. And it's much, much easier, I can tell you, when there is a will in place. So I really think it's a good idea that everyone sit down with a spouse or a friend and talk about what your wishes are, and then go to a lawyer and have them actually properly written out so that what you want to happen actually happens.
How many assets does someone need to have in order to need a will?
Let's divide up the different types of assets that there actually are, because there are assets that people own in their own name, like a brokerage account or a bank account or a house or gold coins or, you know, a collection of rare puppets. And then there are the assets which you might have in your retirement account, like an IRA or a 401k. And the reason I'm separating between those two types of assets is that assets that are in retirement accounts or annuities or any sort of account like that where there is a beneficiary listed on the account document, you then actually don't need to have a will. Because, you know, let's say someone has an IRA and he passes away. When he opened the IRA, hopefully the broker asked him, if you die, who would you like to get the money? And he says, well, I'd like my wife to get it, but if she predeceases me, then I'd like it to be equally divided amongst my seven children. And he writes down the names of the children. That actually goes very smoothly. It's the other assets which are a little more complicated, like the brokerage account. So I don't have a specific number, but you know, once you have any assets that you're concerned about, that's when I think you should write a will. And by the way, just take note that writing a will, it shouldn't be a very expensive process. Literally, if you've thought about what you want to happen, sitting with the lawyer for an hour or two and he writes the will, if you have a normal estate, I'm not talking about people with complex issues, but a normal estate, it really shouldn't be a very pricey endeavor. And so certainly I wouldn't not do it because you don't want to pay the legal fees.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Doug, this has been great advice and certainly important to talk about and applicable to everyone. Tell people how they can get your book and find out more information from you.
So we have a page on my corporate website with all of my books, which is www.profile-financial.com/books. And there you'll find the inheritance book as well as all my previous books. And if you have any questions or comments or concerns, I deal with people who live outside the United States who want to have U.S. investment accounts like IRA accounts or brokerage accounts. And you can contact me through the website there, profile-financial.com.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Thanks so much, Linda. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Linda, for that fantastic interview with Doug. And guess what? Linda's going to be back here in just a minute driving the second half of the show. But I promised you earlier I'd talk more about this idea of the Buzz Index. And if you remember, it's an index that uses the same artificial intelligence techniques used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, so you can make their edge your edge when trying to invest in things that are talked about online. It's licensed to an exchange-traded fund, trades under ticker symbol BUZ, and here's how it works. They don't use surveys. They don't guess. Instead, Buzz targets the most mentioned large-cap U.S. stocks across the social media landscape. The more active the conversation, the greater the reliability of the Buzz. And each of the most mentioned stocks is given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks every month that have the most bullish score, those get included in the index. So the buzz is tracked to capture the latest big data-driven insights every month, positioning Buzz to capture the highest return potential. Invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ to sign up for the newsletter, to see how it works, or to invest in the Buzz Index. By the way, I invest in the Buzz Index. Doesn't make it right for you, but I think I have to have that disclaimer. And somebody who never needs a disclaimer, let's get back to Linda P. Jones.
Thanks, Joe. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good to talk to you. Good to have our gang together. How is Miranda today?
I am doing great. Fall weather is here. I'm super excited about it and ready to put up all of my Halloween decorations. So, woohoo!
Oh my gosh, I'm not ready for summer to be over.
Bring on the autumn.
Good for you. Hey, Doug, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Linda. Having a great holiday season here in Israel. How about you back in the desert?
We still have heat in the desert, still around 105, waiting for summer to end, probably more toward October. So yeah, it's a little warm still, but that's okay. So today, Doug, we're going to be talking about your book, The Inheritance Book. How exciting. We had a great interview. Thank you for that. And wanted to talk more about inheritance and people making sure they're doing the right things with how they're passing on their assets to one another.
Yeah, thank you. I'm actually holding, by the way, I got the proof copy from the publisher. Looks good. Looks beautiful. In fact, it even has my picture on the front, which is, you know, my favorite part about the book. No, but seriously, it really it looks great. And one of the things which I've always thought was important is not to write in super tiny print. And I really like that about the book. Easy to read.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations. And let's talk a little bit about inheritance. Miranda, it said that 75% of people go through their inheritance within 5 years. What do you think is causing that?
Well, I think a lot of people just don't understand how to manage their money properly. Way, way back in the day when I was taking a business class in my undergrad, the professor said, you know, there are some people who, if you take everything away from them and give them 10 bucks, they'll be able to rebuild their fortunes in, you know, in 2 years. And there are some people that if you give them $1 million, they'll just squander it. And I don't think it's necessarily something inherent in people. I just think that a lot of people just don't understand how money works and they don't understand how to manage money. And I know, I mean, I just recently received a payout because the startup company I worked for was acquired. And so I got a payout for my stock options and from some other things. And my goodness, I mean, this was not life-changing money, but it was still a nice chunk of money. And I'm looking at it going, oh my gosh, I could just do so much with this. But then you start looking at where you're putting it and what you're doing with it. And you start looking ahead and projecting ahead and you realize how quickly it can just disappear. My son's got to have braces, you know, like that's just one thing. I owed the IRS money. Like there were things like that, that pretty soon the money was slowly trickling away. And I was like, if I don't get a plan for this and figure this out, like a plan for this and figure this out and put it where it's going to do the most good and start working for me, I'm going to squander it all and it's going to be gone in like a matter of months. And so I think that's the sort of same thing with the inheritance situation. People look at it, it seems like this huge amount of money that they'll never run out of because they've never conceived of having this much money at once. And then they don't make a plan for it. They don't have an idea of what to do with it. And they feel like, I mean, you feel invincible. You feel like you can just spend and it doesn't matter. But the reality is that it can be gone all too quickly. And I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Well, I think there's something very close to that also, Miranda, going on in their head. It isn't money that they earn themselves. So it just feels like money that I can blow much more easily in my head than I can money that I earn myself. And I think maybe thinking a little bit harder about how hard the people had to work that you know, provided that inheritance to get it might be. I don't know if that's the linchpin or what it is, but I've also seen in my practice when I was a financial planner, people get inheritance and they'd spend it on stupid stuff because, hey, it's like finding, you know, an extra $10 bill in your back pocket, except in this case, it's thousands or sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I just want to touch on that, which is that people often see a lot of money in the account. They get so excited. And one of the things they'll often tell me when they come in is they go, Doug, you know, I just want to draw some income. I don't want to touch the principal. I just want to draw income. And then I tell them what that really means, because they're sort of imagining that this, you know, $80,000 that they got as an inheritance, or, you know, from, as a gift even, is going to generate something that's going to create some large monthly income for them. And then we talk about interest rates being kind of low, and that it's not really going to make a huge difference in their life. And they're much better off investing that money for the long term and trying to grow it, rather than at their, let's say, middle age or young age, trying to make this into an income-oriented investment portfolio, which is just not going to happen, especially when rates are low.
Yeah, the idea is sound, Doug, I think. But did you see that there's been a video recently of Grant Cardone going over how if you have $1 million, a lot of people think that that's a ton of money. And yet, if you try
to take it.
Well, no, don't get me wrong, me too. But if you try to make an income stream off of $1 million, it's not the house on fire income stream you think it's going to be. You know, if you're using the 4% rule, which we all know is not the place to finish, it's just a good place to start. We're talking about $40,000 a year. That's a healthy sum of money, certainly, but you're not lifestyle rich and famous on your $1 million income portfolio.
It also matters a lot how old you are, because let's say that you inherit that when you're 30 and you try to get an income stream off it. No way it's going to be a game changer for the rest of your life. But if you're 60 or 70, and you might decide to take more than $40,000 a year out of that, you might take $50,000 or $60,000 and deplete some of that money, that might be okay. If that's okay with you, if your goal is improving your lifestyle now, as opposed to building wealth for the next generation, then great, go for it. Use some interest and some principal at the same time, but you just have to make sure it fits in with who you are and the stage of life that you're at.
Is that something else you think the people do, by the way, when it comes to people and inheritances? If we also think much more about what this money will do for us in the short term versus the long term, because twice here in the last couple minutes, Doug, you've talked about investing for the long term. And yet everyone I've met that's got inheritance has always said, well, I could pay my car off with this now. I could buy a car with this now. I could put a down payment on a car now. I could put a down payment on a boat now. Mm-hmm. Like all these things that I can do now, we don't think long term.
It totally messes you up. I'll tell you, I just had a call from someone. He didn't get an inheritance. He got divorced and they sold the house. And he ended up with about $500,000. And he's a, you know, middle-aged guy. He's probably about 45 or 50. He was feeling, you know, kind of emotionally down about the divorce, which was, you know, quite understandable. And he said he's just having trouble getting new clients for his business, and he just can't really get himself out there. So he wants to draw some income off the portfolio, off this $500,000, just for a few years, he said. I was thinking like for a few weeks would be okay. But he thought for a few years until he gets his feet on the ground, gets his business up and running again. And I told him, I mean, I said it very nicely, but it's just the four of us. So I'll tell you straightforward. I said, absolutely not. Are you kidding? You can't. You're just not old enough to convert this into an income stream. And worse, if you stop really working on your business right now and going out and getting clients, it's going to be a much, much worse situation psychologically, if not economically, in several years when you finally say, okay, good. Now I feel great. Now I can go back to work. You will have wiped out this one nest egg that you have that came from the sale of your house, which for most people is like the biggest sum of money they're ever going to get, aside from maybe an inheritance. And I told him in no uncertain terms that I thought this was a really crummy idea and that he just can't take this money, even though it seems like a lot, and use it now. So I think people oftentimes need an outsider to hit him with a jackhammer and say, no way, you cannot do that at this stage in your life. You can't spend the money now.
I think that's really admirable, Doug, because a lot of people do think it's just a piggy bank that they can spend. And what they don't realize is they're not earning to replenish that bank. And it's a finite amount of money that can go. And nowadays, it's really easy to spend that much, right? So how can people understand that they have to replenish the money that they've inherited and can't just have it go out the door, that it has to have a way to come back in and keep coming back, or else if they do spend, it's all gone?
Well, how would you say to someone, Linda, who's like really afraid of the market? Because we, you know, we talk about investing in the market in the long term, and the volatility is okay if you hold on. But you get to people who either they don't have the tolerance for risk, or they're older and they may not be appropriate for them, and they need income. And then you talk to them about things like bonds and CDs, which are boring. And they say, yeah, but everyone else is talking about making money, and I got to grow the portfolio. How do you find the balance for someone who really, really shouldn't take risk or doesn't have the heart to take the risk?
Well, you probably deal with that every day with clients, but I think it comes down to education. I mean, people have to be educated, but then they also have to have practical experience with investing too, because we can tell them all about risk. We can explain about the ups and downs in the markets, but until you experience that fear of the stock market declining 30% or 50%, you don't know what to do and you don't know how to survive that. And I think people need both education and experience to get through that. It's very difficult if they're a beginning investor and they really don't have any of that experience to try to be comfortable with, you know, with appropriate risk in the market. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm up there. I find, but I have these conversations with people, especially when they're retired, and they're a little surprised because they come to me and they think, well, he's an investment advisor. He's going to tell me about investing. And they think that means the stock market. And I'm turning them to CDs and telling them, reminding them about how much money they had lost in 2008 when the market crashed. And they say, yeah, but it wasn't so bad and it recovered. And I'm stressing to them that they're in a new stage in life now. And I agree with you, Linda. I do think it's the education, but it's the problem, I think, with, you know, the media and the investment companies, and frankly, even shows like ours, where we sometimes get very excited about how well someone can do in the market. And people hear that and they want to piece that action. And it's just not always right for everyone.
So Miranda, what do you think about inheritance? Is that something that happens before we pass? Is it just through a will when we're gone? What's your impression of inheritance?
Yeah, really. I mean, I think inheritance should be looked at more of as a, you know, we talk about estate planning and that kind of goes with inheritance as well. But I think that it really needs to be looked at as something sustainable, not necessarily like a big chunk of money that somebody gets after you die. But I know people who love seeing their money put to work today. For instance, I have an aunt who married into the family, so she's not related by blood. And her parents are done quite well for themselves, are quite wealthy. And instead of hoarding everything to be passed on after they die, they take full advantage of the fact that you can give money, a certain amount of money to people each year tax-free. Now, the thing you have to realize about the gift tax is that it is actually a tax that is not paid by the recipient. It is paid by the giver, but you have an exemption. So you have an exemption of, and I don't know what it is this year because it changes. It's one of those things that they change based on inflation. So you can actually, you know, you don't have to report this exclusion up to $15,000 per person. And so these folks make gifts to each of their children and each of the children's spouses each year of 15, you know, of the maximum. So this year it'll be 15,000. And so my aunt gets 15,000, my uncle gets 15,000. And so combined, that's 30,000. And so, you know, it's not like, once again, it's not like life-changing money this year, but at the same time, it's something substantial. It's something beyond, and it's something that they can look and see what their posterity is doing with the money. You know, and then also, I mean, I have another friend who received a trust fund from his grandmother meant for education. And so she was alive. And so she got to see him go to school, use the money from the trust fund and get a good education. Looking at that and saying, well, inheritance doesn't have to be something that you do when people die. Inheritance can be something that you plan for and look at the tax implications, a family trust, the gift tax exclusion, all of these things you can take a look at, talk to a knowledgeable estate planning attorney who can kind of get through this or look at your team and figure out how you can like leave a legacy. I mean, one of the things I like to do is give to local charities, and it's not inheritance money. It's not huge amounts of money, but I like giving to local charities because I can see how it works in the community. And so, you know, maybe you start a charitable foundation or a charitable trust or something like that. But I think that long-term planning and looking at your money as a way to help you achieve goals or help you leave a legacy that you can actually see while you're alive, I think that's worth looking at too, rather than how can I, you know, save up a $10 million estate to pass on to all of my heirs that they can fight over after I'm gone.
Yeah, you bring up a great point. There are things like donor-advised funds where you can set up like your own foundation, but a lot less expensive. Did you cover things like that in your book, Doug?
Yeah, I think those are, first off, that is very important. I like one of the things that Miranda was talking about was covering the many, many different paths that people can follow. I'm also a big fan of, you know, the term that we use is, that we use a lot is you want to give with a warm hand instead of a cold hand, because a lot of times people will generate a huge amount of money in their lifetime. And they just keep thinking about leaving it as an inheritance. And it's just a mistake, because a lot of times I've dealt with multiple generations in the same family. They're all clients. Like I have the grandparents, the parents, and the kids. And I know that the young people don't even have enough money to send their kids for piano lessons and braces. And the grandparents have millions of dollars, which they're planning to leave one day in an inheritance. And by that time, the kids aren't going to need the braces anymore. So two lessons come out of this. One is it's good to have an open communication between the generations. Talk about your needs. Don't be embarrassed to talk to your parents about money. And parents shouldn't be shy about talking to their kids about money. People have to just discuss it and freely and openly, unless, of course, it's totally not appropriate. And so that's number one. And the second thing is to realize that it's okay to gift money. And the way that Miranda was describing, by keeping within the $15,000 per year gifting, it just means that you don't have to file a gift tax return, makes it easy. Although, just for the record, if someone does want to give more than $15,000, not a big deal. Just tell your accountant, let him report it. And it doesn't generate that you have to pay tax. It just means that ultimately, when you die, if you have above the federal limit, which on the federal level we're talking is now about $11 million per person, if you've given away more than that, then that'll become more of a taxable event for you. But I'm not giving tax advice. Most people, I don't think, are too worried about that.
And if you have a large estate, gifting is a great way to try to reduce that estate before you die to minimize some estate taxes, right?
Absolutely. And gifting is a fantastic way. And charity is up there with perhaps even a better way.
What do you guys think about this idea of deciding how people spend your money beyond the grave? I mean, let's say that you've passed away and you have a good sum of money and you want to make sure that the kid uses it for, not even the kid, whoever the beneficiary is, uses it for certain things. Is that a good thing to do or a bad thing? Like, you can have this money if you go to college, or you can have this money if you take over the family business or whatever it might be. I saw some clients do that from time to time, and some people brought it up as a moral issue that they thought it was good, they thought it was bad, and I'm just curious what you guys think.
I like it because I think the person that created the wealth has the ability to control how they want it to go, who they want it to go to, and how they want it spent. So if they are requiring someone use it to buy a home or someone use it for college education or something like that, I think that's a good thing. And that's certainly their prerogative to do that. So I think that gives people more guidance in terms of how to spend it and what they should do with it, and hopefully keeps them from not blowing it like we've been talking about. You know, it's a win-win, I think. For the people that give it, they know that it's going toward a good purpose that they wanted them to have it for. And the people that receive it, they're clear about what, you know, what they're to do with the money. So I think it's a good thing. What do you think, Doug?
I do agree with you, Linda, in principle, because first off, as terms of what's right and wrong, listen, it's their money. The giver wouldn't have given it if the kid became a bum. And so it's up to him if he decides to write such a thing in a trust. The only caveat that I would say is that it's really, really important to do this with the help of a lawyer. Don't just sketch something down or use one of these online, you know, write your trust document and put everything in you want it, because these things are easily contested if they're even a little bit strange. So you might have one intention about encouraging a child to get education or to take over a family business, and the way it's written and the way it's ultimately executed may not match your goals, and it could just end up getting tied up in court with lawyers fighting over it for many, many years. So make sure if you do that, just to have a really, really good trust and estate attorney prepare the documentation for you.
Yeah, that reminds me, Aretha Franklin just passed away intestate. So no will, has four sons. One is a special needs son and will require, you know, care probably for the rest of his life. She was approached by her attorney to create a will and didn't want to. So all that has to be decided by the courts and by the laws, and probably, you know, will end up costing a lot more money because there was no will. So
yeah, especially the special needs issue is really important, because there are, believe it or not, there are specialties in the trust and estate legal field, specifically people who specialize in families that have special needs kids who maybe are getting help from the state, and they want to help the families to structure their estate so that the child, the special needs child, doesn't get cut off from funding from the state. And this is a real specialty. So if you're in that situation, make sure you find someone who actually has dealt with it before.
Awesome. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you for that great discussion, Doug, and good luck with your book. We're excited for it to come out and to see the inheritance book. Tell us more details about that, please.
Yeah, so the name of the book is The Inheritance Book. It's actually really designed for people who are living outside the United States who are getting an inheritance from someone in the U.S. That's kind of my niche. If you want to find out more about the book, you can go to my corporate website, which is profile-financial.com/books. You'll see The Inheritance Book there, as well as all the other books that I've written.
Awesome. And Joe, what's going on with you?
Man, we are taking our show on the road. We're doing live shows in Orlando, in Detroit, and in Kansas City. So if you're in any of those three cities, come hang out with us. It's stackybenjamins.com/tour. And can't wait. It's coming up fast, Linda.
Wow, that sounds very fun. I want to go.
Come on.
Miranda, what's going on with you?
Yeah, I'm just working on getting back into the freelance situation. Head on over to do.com where I'm freelancing. I have been for several years, but I did write a big article on like how to get back into full-time freelancing when you've had an absence. And so, you know, I haven't been full-time freelancing for 2 years and now I'm back into it and it's been really exciting. So check that out. And also don't forget to visit plantingmoneyseeds.com for more information on living your best life.
Awesome. Well, I'm so excited that my book came out last week. You're already a wealth heiress. Now think and act like one. 6 practical steps to make it a reality now. And if you want to hear a little bit of one of my chapters, The Wealth Building Formula, you can go to lyndapjones.com and listen to podcast number 453. Miranda, take us home.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Remember, you can check us out at moneytreepodcast.com where we have all of our shows archived. You can get more information about the panelists and the projects that we are involved with. You can also subscribe to us. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and anywhere fine podcasts are sold. So make sure you hit that subscribe button and you will have a new, fresh, steaming, hot episode delivered to you every Friday morning. And until next time, remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.
I know Linda's supposed to be the one asking questions.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, but
guys, I literally have like a jackhammer happening outside my window right now. So I'm really happy that I'm on mute.
All right, good.